Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisor of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, where each week Ben and I bring you the insider's guide to property investing. Hello, mate.
G'day, mate. Two in a row.
No, you can't talk about AFL. You've got to talk about that. We've got to talk about our New South Wales listeners.
Who are they?
What was the score last night?
Oh, yeah. I didn't watch it. Mate, I was crook.
Mate, for all those, this is your chance. All those New South Wales listeners who have to endure the AFL talk that do every week.
State of origin.
Yeah, mate.
So the Blues won.
Is that a statement or a question?
Oh, I did see it on the news this morning. Was it 28-4?
28-4. I'm impressed. They smoked them.
I had it came up on one of those little, you know, news bars down the bottom.
Yeah.
So that's it. I'm up to date on the NRL.
It's a shame for
we still haven't talked about two in a row.
Well, it's a shame that because you see how I'm quickly moving on.
I had three. I go. 100-point win or was it 100-point?
That was unprovoked.
Loss.
Did you see that? Unprovoked.
Loss.
But Damien yesterday in the office, he's walking around and he just can't believe it. He goes, there's just no State of Origin atmosphere in here whatsoever. I said, mate, is that something we should know about?
As you say, we go for the Storm. We're Melburnians, right? And what do we every time State of Origin comes up, we end up losing three games in a row. We fall from top down to the middle of the pack because all of our players are on State of Origin duty.
Mate, this was your chance to get a win with the New South Wales supporters.
Yeah. So. All of those in a row. Terrific spectacle.
Tell us all two in a row. Collingwood are two in a row.
No, that's it. Mate. Well, we're playing you. I'm going to lose next week, so I'm going to get in early.
Hey, yeah, we've got a very special guest today, but we're going to quickly get through a few things before we get to chat with Craig. But realestate.com.au, we put out the challenge last week to see what's the link between
money management, basically. Yeah, that's what we were talking about, wasn't it, Bryce? Did you need a little bit of help there?
Mate, I was too busy following on the fact that State of Origin last night. So the link between beer, I was trying to say jugs of beer, but it was actually pots of beer.
Yeah. And there was
your grandma's flower jar. So if anyone hasn't checked it out, all of us, they can go onto our Facebook, check that. But the second one's out, Ben.
Yes.
But we're forecasting money.
Yes.
They dropped us in the middle of Glenferrie Oval in Hawthorne.
I know, on our big red couch.
For that big red couch. So I guess we'll put that up so that people can see that as well.
But, now, I've got a question on that. Are we going to do that now or later?
No, we're going to do that later.
Okay, beautiful.
Yeah, we'll do that later. And a quick one, my mindset minute today is formal education will make you a living, self-education will make you a fortune, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
So our podcast listeners know that because they're listening to podcasts. Self-educating.
Above and beyond.
One will get you a job, one will make you a fortune. So there
we go. That.
But without any further ado, let's introduce Craig Stevens, who's the Managing Director of Jazz Stevens, which is one of the iconic brands in the inner west of Melbourne.
It is.
And it's a fourth generation business. Craig, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Mate, it's been in the family for a long time. I mean, were you always destined to be in real estate?
Not really, no. It's 1923, so it's a fourth generation, as I said. Jazz is actually short for James. So back in those days, a bit like Chaz for Charles. So it was James Henry Stevens, Jazz H. Stevens.
Wow.
We dropped the H about
I've learned something about
10 years
your
ago.
Brand.
Look, I came into the business when I was 32, I think, at the time. So after school and doing commerce at Melbourne Uni, I decided to get into the money market. Financial markets. I was actually a bond trader in Melbourne and Sydney, and then actually spent 4 years in London with a firm called Merrill Lynch. So
small firm.
Have you seen that movie Wolf of Wall Street? A little bit like that.
Yeah, uh-huh. Was it?
The Christmas parties were pretty much like that. But
did you sink the boat?
Nah. Spent 4 years in London. Had a great time over there. Started an Aussie rules footy team called the Wandsworth Demons and the British Australian Rules Football League, and then came back in '92 and actually got back in the family business or got into the family business at that age, at 32 years of age.
So that's an interesting path, though, isn't it? You know,
financial markets.
It seems like you're going down this road, and then you've sort of done a 180 down the road.
Came back to Melbourne, hooked up with my girlfriend, got married, had kids straight away, but I really love Melbourne, born and bred. And I think from a financial markets point of view, if you really want to be at the top of that field, you need to move to Sydney or Hong Kong, New York, or London. Mm. So I decided to come to Melbourne.
So Craig, now as the Managing Director of Jazz Stevens, what sort of some of the things that you've learnt in your career in finance that you may have been able to bring into a great independent agency like Just Eat?
Yeah, sure. One of the things I think is just having a really good team. Yeah. We really pride ourselves in actually, you know, developing people's careers.
Yep.
And selecting individuals and mentoring them and bringing them through the system.
Yep.
We have a, I'm very proud to say, 41 staff and a very low turnover of staff.
Yep.
So it's
so
really
it's a culture you're
trying
to
create. Yeah, it's a culture. And I think any team, whether it's a sporting team or a financial markets team or a real estate team, it's all about culture.
Yep.
And also it's our business and our success of our business is based on systems.
Yep.
So you really gotta be able to follow the systems.
Yep.
And it's not rocket science, but we certainly pride ourselves on that. So those two factors, I think, I brought across to the money market. And the third thing is open plan. We're very much like your office, an open plan office.
Yeah.
I worked in a dealing room with about 110 people trading, you know, different currencies and whatever. And the actual synergy, 1 + 1 = 3, really came through in that.
Okay.
So one of the first things I did when I came to Jazz was actually get everyone out of their little glass cubicles.
Yep.
And put them in an open plan office. And even to today, we just did a major office refit 6 months ago.
Yeah.
It's still open plan.
Right.
I'm quite proud of that.
It's interesting to say about teaching the system. We've just spent a couple of days on the Gold Coast at the Australian Real Estate Conference. Eric, I know you go every second year. And there was an unbelievable speaker by the name of Bob Wolfe. He was 67. He was at ARIC 20 years ago.
Yep.
He got a standing ovation.
Yeah, I saw that.
And basically all he said was do the basics and do them well.
Correct.
So I guess for you, that's half the challenge for you to instill in your team is that he was an outstanding performer. The top performers who got on stage, they all got up there and preached that they follow the system, don't forget to do the basics and do them well.
Yeah. What I also liked about that presentation was the goal setting.
Yes.
So he planned to become what he planned to become, and he was just had all these papers and he was, you know, wrestling through them. So it was like, is he organised? Like, is he just written his step? Very. But I liked it because it wasn't that traditional PowerPoint. And he's thrown, 2004, learn how to fly a plane, become better at tennis.
Yeah.
Like, he's just reading off all of these things. And then, you know, 2014, buy a new plane. So he's obviously learned how to fly, now he flies planes. So you could just see throughout the course of his career, and personally for him, what he's been able to do. And I think, you know, plan to become what you plan to become. He talked about at the start of each year, he writes down all of his goals. And
that's it.
He goes, you've got to write them down. You've got to write them down. And he's got all of these papers and he's got books that he's written.
Yeah.
One great thing he did is he had a book there. He goes, I love this passage out of this book. And he's ripped the front cover off the book and ripped the pages out of the book and stapled the pages to the front cover. So one, he could remember which book it came from, but two, it's just a quick reference guide for it. So he was great.
I love Bob. Good. The thing about Bob is he's got a really big why.
Yeah.
And I think really in my 20-odd year career in real estate, the most successful salespeople have massive whys.
Hmm.
If the why is big enough, the how will take care of itself.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you want to be successful, work out your why.
Yeah.
Have you seen any common themes in those whys that the successful people have, or are they just so...
Well, I think it's a very personal thing, Bryce. I mean, you know, everyone's why is different.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing is, once they've worked out their why and got it written down, you can see how they can achieve it pretty quickly. And they value their time and they work on dollar-producing activities to get to their goals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think most people look at their why as family. Like, you know, obviously to provide, and especially from the hunter and gatherers right through to today, family's important. But I know for me, if I was asked that honest question, I'd actually say my why is about others. It's about changing their lives. I mean, I was at a dinner party once and someone said, you know, I said, so Ben, you know, what's your plans for the business? I said, honestly, I'd love to be able to change everyone's money management habits where everyone could be somewhat financially better off. And there was a lot of challenge that, you can't do that. And you know, Indigenous people potentially won't be, you know, how can you get to that? It's like, well, that was the greatest motivation for me to sort of say, don't say I can't do anything.
Yep.
Because I get a lot of motivation out of people saying, oh, that can't be done.
Yep.
You know, so that is an example that it doesn't always just have to be about family and being financially secure. There can be other things in terms of wanting to show that, you know what, don't tell me I can't do something.
Yeah,
when I think there is a way, even if it's I'm changing their existence by $10 better off each week or whatever it is, I'm making a difference.
Well, it's all that sharing. And I think a lot of managing directors like myself, it gets to the stage where, you know, it's bringing others along for the journey.
Correct. There's enough financial well-being.
I mean,
there.
How much do you need? So it's bringing others for the journey, spreading a bit of a wealth, but also educating and mentoring.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's where I can add a bit of value to my business.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I get fired up when someone says that as Ben's business partner, if they say you can't do it, it's like, oof. You've just fueled the fire. Thank you very much.
Don't tell me I can't do it. Now I'm going to work 80 hours a week instead of 75 hours a week.
Hey, can you rewind as far back as the family memory goes? How did James H. Stevens Real Estate start in the early days?
1923, he was the mayor of Footscray at that stage, and actually therefore also was the president of Footscray Football Club in 1923. So I think in those days you were mayor for 12 months, I believe just started the business and collecting rents. My grandfather was riding around on a bicycle collecting rents, and I think from that stage it was virtually a one or two man operation. My father came into the business, Alan Stevens, I think in 1960. I was born in 61, and I think really supercharged the business there from two people to about five or six. But Dad was very innovative back in the 70s and 80s, things such as, which we take for granted now, Saturday open for inspections. He talks about the very, very first time they decided to have an open day on a Saturday, because in those days the offices, all real estate offices, used to close at 12 o'clock on a Saturday. So they had an open day. Dad was innovative in regards to a property guide, and, you know, in those days it was black and white. So numerous things like that along the way. I think Dad really supercharged the business, and Jazz was always seen, Jazz Stevens in the Inner West, as being at the forefront of change. And then I came to it in 92, and, you know, Dad was still very much involved as he is today, but I think just, you know, leveraging that and all those ideas and trying to be creative still at the forefront now with the internet and things that have changed over the last 10 to 15 years.
Have you got any stats on how many transactions the business has turned over since 1923?
Oh, not since 1923, but we've been pretty consistent over the last 10 to 15 years. It's around about one a day. So we sell around about 360 transactions a year. We have just over 1,400 properties under management, and that actually has grown exponentially the last few years with us putting a second business development manager on. But yeah, we've got a number of landlords and a pretty consistent sales team and pretty consistent turnover, despite the market, you know, going up and down a little bit over the last 10 years.
So you come back from the UK.
Yep.
And you're now, you know, sort of drawn like a magnet to bricks and mortar. Did you have any properties? Did you buy anything before you went away? And I want to talk about your personal property investment journey, if we can.
I had numerous part-time jobs. I was a paper boy at 14. I sold pies and hot dogs, the cricket and the footy when I was 15, 16. Worked at the scout shop in the city there when I was 17. So I had numerous part-time jobs throughout uni. I had a little vending machine business. So I got the age of 18. I think I saved up about $4,000 or $5,000. Dad, being in real estate, said, well, you know, the first thing you should do with that money is go and actually buy a property. So I bought my first property in Mackay Street, Yarra, for $18,000.
Oh, there we go. And what year was this?
That would have been 1980.
Yeah. Wow. Can we just hold that property?
Yep.
What do you think that same property is worth today? It's probably been renovated, but...
Yeah, I think it just sold recently, actually, for around about $800,000.
$18,000 to $800,000.
So I bought it for $18,000, and when I was 22, I sold it for $41,000, and so I was an absolute legend.
You're a superstar. You're on jet.
Yeah, but that $18,000 to $41,000, actually, it was a first-time buyer's grant, so I actually got my money back from the government from a deposit and then obviously borrowed the rest. So it was actually a free transaction, if you think of it that way.
Yeah.
Because the government obviously, as they still now, help out the first-time buyers. So that led me... It's a little single front Victorian, and it went from 18 to 41. So at $41,000, that certainly gave me some equity at 22 years of age. Yep. I then rolled that over into two terrace houses in Belairs Avenue, Kensington, and rented those out whilst I was obviously up in Sydney for a year or two, and then obviously in London, and held those for a number of years. But certainly I have continued to, one of the things I've done is continue to actually build a property portfolio.
Yeah, right.
To today, which is reasonably substantial.
So, I joke around. We drive around Yarra. There's an element of Craig's. That's Craig's on the corner of. I shouldn't say the street, but there's a big corner. You own the whole set of townhouses. You've got arguably the best house in Yarra in the family.
That's Yeah, they've had that for a number of years.
I would drive past that house with a bit of envy.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about your story is that a lot of our agents that we come across, have actually transacted their properties as opposed to holding on to their portfolio. Yep. Have you noticed that in the industry you're in?
Well, I think it's actually a little bit surprising. We're in this industry, we're preaching the benefits of property and negative gearing and the taxation advantages with that, and just generally watching capital growth. And my father always told me that you create your wealth through your assets, not through your pay packet. So if you take that quote, that's where how you create financial independence. So with that philosophy and having grown up with Dad at the dinner table buying that first property, you know, and certainly through financial markets, I think that doesn't matter if you're making $50,000, $100,000 or $200,000, your wage will only dictate your lifestyle.
Yep.
It's whether you actually sit at the front of the plane or the back of the plane. You're spending that money. So by buying property throughout the last 20 or 30 years, it's allowed me to actually, you know, create wealth.
Brilliant.
And continue to add to my property portfolio. And yeah, sure, I had a bit of luck along the way, I suppose. And I think Dad said to me once, gave me a bit of a nudge when property in Yarraville was about 180,000. He said, go and buy another investment property here because it's not going to be under 200 for much longer.
Yeah, he said
the same thing to me at 300 and 400 and 500,000. So those little properties now are certainly, and I've continued to hold them, and certainly built up a, you know, fairly substantial portfolio, which I'm pretty proud of, and hopefully going to educate my kids to do the similar. Yeah.
So I've got a question around that in terms of, is there any point in this last cycle? Because obviously we've seen the Inner West go, you know, incredibly well.
Yep.
You know, 5-7 kilometres from Melbourne.
Yep.
A fairly good access points into the city. So, is there a point where your dad and you have said at some point, gee, you know, I'm surprised at how well it's gone this cycle. And
sure.
Do we think that maybe it's fair value or it's just a bit beyond that?
Yeah, and people say that, oh, geez, expensive now. I said, well, that's exactly what was said back in 1995 or 2000.
Yep.
If you think of this expensive, if the inner west of Melbourne, and one could consider now the average sale price is around about $950 million.
Yeah,
okay,
moment, yep.
So it's moved up. And certainly over the last 5 years, it has almost doubled, okay? Mm. But if you think it's expensive now, let's jump on a plane, let's go to Sydney and go to the inner suburbs there of Glebe and Balmain, which is, again, 7Ks and CBD.
Yep.
And that property in Yarraville, which is worth $1 million, is worth close on $2 million.
Yes. Yeah, I've got one
so
in Alexandra.
It's
so
all relative. And likewise, if we jump on a plane and go to Tassie,
it's
probably half the price. Mm.
Yep.
If Launceston, Hobart, whatever. So
a quarter.
Yeah. So it's all relative. I think the philosophy is, if you look back, and I saw that fantastic chart in your foyer, property basically doubles every 10 years. So to test that rule, go back and ask your parents and grandparents what they pay for their homes in 1950, 1960, and you will track it through the graph of the last 50 years. Property doubles every 10 years. Now, admittedly, in Melbourne, the last 5 years, we've seen a bit of a kick up, but you know, it wasn't too long ago the GFC was there and things settled down there for a year or two. But generally speaking, that's the golden rule. Every 10 years, property doubles.
Mm. Do you think it's going to double 2027? You're buying a single
probably.
Runner
in Yarraville
for two?
Well, if I come back and stand here and, and take a bet, I suspect it will. You know, it's all relative.
Yeah. And if you go to, sorry, Ben, if you go to the other side of the city, same distance, you know, it's double plus 10% anyway. So, you know, it's you don't have to fly to Sydney to Balmain. You have to go to Richmond or something that's close in.
Well, I mean, it comes back to compounding interest. Mm-hmm. So it's the classic thing, and if you haven't checked out that Warren Buffett, you know, the making of Warren Buffett, he talks about the power of compounding. And so, and also ASIC, in terms of their Money Smarts page on their website, also talk about the Rule of 72. So we've talked about it before, but I think it's probably good for our new listeners to understand the concept of the Rule of 72. So we're talking about property doubling every 10 years. Effectively, what has to happen is it needs to get 7.2% compounding return every year. Now, properties don't go up in a linear line, like what we've seen here. It's doubled in five. So there will be a period of hiatus. There will be a softening at the top of the cycle. And the other is in return. So if you get a 10% compounding return, the property price is going to double every 7.2 years.
Yes.
And that's the importance of asset selection and location selection. That is what it all comes down to when you're trying to do that, because there has been other properties in other markets that haven't done as well as that. You know, they might have only been delivering 6 or 5%. So that means that they're going to take, what is it, 11, 12 years before they double in value. That is the power of compound, but it also says that not every property is being created equal. And not every location has the amenity, the proximity, the convenience, the lifestyle drivers, all of those things, the character of homes, that basically make it an unstoppable force in terms of driving that value forward. So I think we could be standing here in, you know, 10 years' time and talking about $2 million properties in Yarraville and going, how did that happen?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like it's hard to believe because we've done the numbers on Melbourne. So we've gone back to 1974 when the Valuer General had their data made available where they've got median house prices for every suburb across Victoria.
Yeah.
And in Melbourne's metropolitan area, for the last 40 years, we've talked about it being over 8% as the broader market. Now, that's incredible numbers. And we think that there has been a reason for that. We talk about going from single income to double household income. And obviously, you know, now we've got careers and executive jobs where both parents are earning good money. So there will be challenges for other parts of the market where if they don't have that double household income, historical low interest rates has made the rising tide lifting all ships. So we still think that there is some areas that are overvalued based on what we would think would be fair value.
Yes.
But the inner city stuff, and you don't just look at Melbourne, look at globally. You talked about Sydney, but we go globally on that point, don't we, Craig? And it's, you know, you lived in London.
Yeah.
Could you have bought in London when you lived there?
Yeah, the suburbs of Brixton and whatever, you know, I mean, they've just gone through the roof.
Yeah, crazy stuff. So it's really, really big stuff.
Hey, it sounds like you've had the good fortune of having some of the best advice in real estate given to you across the dinner table from your father. But what can you distill down? What were the one or two best bits of advice that he gave you? Clearly, you know, nudged you when things were approaching 200,000.
Yeah, he did, didn't he? Look, I think one of the things Dad obviously, and I even preach it now to my staff, is, well, anyone out there, even these people listening to the podcast, is if you're going to get into property, surround yourself with really good people, people that actually know more than you. So I think number one is you need a panel of experts. I've been fortunate to work with a mortgage broker a number of years and also a really good solicitor. And most importantly, number three, a really good accountant. So I make an appointment to sit down with my accountant every 6 months. Now, a lot of people feel like going to an accountant is like going to the dentist. I actually sit down with him every 6 months, and it's for an hour, maybe an hour and a half. And this is not when we're doing our tax return. This is doing other things to strategize about the property portfolio and where it's at and gearing and those types of things. And understanding the numbers and understanding the strategy. So when an opportunity does come up, I'm ready to pounce. And that's why I'm always sitting down also with my broker and actually knowing my capacity, my LVR limits, and looking at my finances, assets and liabilities all the time to see the opportunities that do arise.
So what goes through your mind in those six, because you mentioned before, you know, that money isn't the driver anymore. You've obviously got a level of comfort. So what is the bigger why for you on your portfolio in terms of why will you keep progressing that forward?
Well, there's no magic number. There's no ceiling. I think at the end of the day, it's just a passion. It's a hobby now. I really do generally like buying an investment property, an old Victorian, and renovating with my, again, my panel of experts, my three or four tradies who work with me, the guy who polished the floor, the painter, the carpenter. And I normally spend $20,000 to $30,000 doing a cosmetic renovation and then actually put a tenant in there and set and forget. And that's generally been my model over the last few years. Having said that, I just bought a house and did my first ever dual occupancy, where I've put a little brand new three bedroom townhouse in the backyard. Now that's been an experience. I've learned a lot along the way.
It's a time drain, isn't it?
Well, it's not too bad. I've enjoyed it. It's coming to the end now, and a little bit longer. It's been about 12 to 18 month project, time to get council permits and the like. But I've now created an asset which I've built from scratch, and it's a lot easier, I think, the second time around than the first time around. But either building or alternatively renovating, it's a passion and it's a really big why. I just like to do it as opposed to go to work.
So you just keep accumulating. You see yourself just continually accumulating. There's no sort of jobs done.
Is there a time when you're going to say the accumulation phase is over? Now I'm just going to retire the debt out and have that lovely passive.
Yeah, we've had that conversation with my accountant. I suppose at my age, I'm 55 years of age, the discussion is around superannuation and moving my funds, my assets into super.
Yep.
So that's probably a thing that I'm looking at now.
Smurf, self-managed super.
Yeah, I've got one of those, had those for 10 years, and I've also bought some commercial property. So, for example, my offices at 104 to 108 Silverado is in my Smurf.
Yep.
But most of my properties are residential,
99%,
and I like to do the project, and I normally do out one a year, just to not distract me from my other things I do in my life. It's just a bit of a hobby.
So can I ask a question? Is the total portfolio positive, neutrally geared, or
yeah, look at that all the time. It's slightly negative geared. I mean, the rents have gone up, and of course, interest rates have come down. So from that point of view, the last few years, it's looking a lot more balanced. Asset selection, I tend not to sway away from units and flats. It's basically been little single front Victorian homes or double front.
Yep.
And also look at other suburbs, peripheral suburbs, that I can see really good capital growth. So I wish I could say I've got more properties in Yarraville, Seddon, but majority of my properties in the suburbs of Footscray, Sunshine, Maidstone, and a couple in Yarraville, Seddon. But generally speaking, I'm just looking for maybe a development site to come up. I might look at doing one of those in the next year or two.
Okay.
Is that development on Somerville near your parents' house? So that was yours, wasn't it?
That's my father. Okay. Yep. So he.
It was a factory, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was an old factory.
He had that. Know a client who owns one of the lots there.
Yeah, he had that in 1985, and he had it for many, many years. And then with my youngest brother, he does a little bit of development. They decided to do that together and had a builder and got a really good outcome there in terms of integrated housing project. Of 10 houses and apartments.
Yeah. Fantastic. So from a business perspective, were you ever tempted to, you know, your office is right bang in the middle of the Yarraville village and the Seddon village. Was there ever, well, two questions. One, was there ever any idea to move into one of the villages, and two, to even expand to another market?
We expanded to Williamstown just on 8 years ago. So that was a market, it's the city of Hobson Bay that we covered off down there, and the Yarraville office tends to cover north of Westgate, which is the city of Maribyrnong. No real expansion thoughts of franchising or moving to the eastern suburbs. I mean, I've got enough grey hair as it is, so managing 41 staff and over two offices in Yarraville and Williamstown, we're quite comfortable with that. And again, I think that, you know, it's in terms of what's your why are you doing it? Jazz Stevens have 5 or 10 offices. Would it make me feel any happier? Not necessarily, but certainly we enjoy what we do, and at the same time is create wealth through property management and property investment.
Yeah, we share. You have a good market share in your patch as well. So
for the listeners' benefit, coming back to that negative, positive, geared story, I mean, I've been having a few conversations with a couple of journalists, one from the Fin Review yesterday, and also I did an interview with Alan Cole recently about negative gearing and so forth. You know, I'm talking, negative gearing is not a strategy, it's just a moment in time. So obviously inside your portfolio, Craig, you've got a series of properties that you bought very early on in the piece, which are naturally positively geared and considerably positively geared, I would have thought.
Well, I keep borrowing against them, so...
The actual original debt that you took, so you're just using the equity to go to keep the overall portfolio negative.
Yep.
But it's important to understand there's a lot of people, and you know, one of the journalists I was talking to yesterday, I had to explain to her several times that the concept that over the journey, the negatively geared properties turn positively geared.
Yes.
I mean, yes, you might release the, you know, some of the equity out of them, but that's... to control another asset.
Yes. That's globally rather than in isolation.
Exactly. Yes. So, you know, that's been part of the luxury for you in the sense that, you know, your $41,000 property or your 80, that absolutely right now would be significantly positively geared over the journey. You would, you know, that $800,000 home today, what sort of rent would that get today?
Oh, yeah.
$550 a week.
Okay,
there you go. Yeah. So there's a perfect example of that. Now that asset sits there at $800. You don't measure it against the $800 because you bought it for $18,000 or whatever it may be. So that, and I think that's an important message because a lot of people who are new to this, and if I'm hearing journalists who are trying to understand the concept, not understanding that negative gearing is not a strategy, it's just a moment in time.
Yeah.
That I, you know, and
it's a tax outcome.
Yeah, that's right. And obviously, ultimately, over time, we want those properties to continue to grow and the rents, raising the rents, and we can, you know, we can get...
May I say, you know, after the last 20 years, this last 4 or 5 years, we're in historical low interest rates. Mm. I mean, it's a magnificent time to be in real estate, be in property. And it looks like with inflation under control and the RBA and its current outlooks, that generally speaking, we're going to have it for a number of years.
Yeah.
So if you can speak to experts like yourselves and negative gear and interest-only loans and know your numbers, there's still plenty of opportunity out there. So, you know, it's good times ahead.
Yeah.
Craig, with that as a backdrop, you and I chatted on the phone during the week and we were talking about, I've asked, we've had a sales agent series and I've asked them the question, you know, why don't more real estate agents who have the front row seat buy more real estate? And they kind of interpreted that as they can't buy their own listings.
Yep.
But what I really mean is if they're standing at an auction every second weekend seeing people buy, why are so few selling agents going to the competitors' auctions to buy one for themselves? Why aren't they doing it?
Yeah, good question. I asked the same question to try and mentor my young staff. I mean, I think at 25, and look, I was 25 once to say 30 years of age, where the majority of real estates are, or 25, 35, I think there's a lot of the young salespeople in the West, for example. They've got different goals and ambitions. And, you know, I see some of the money that these young guys make, and it's six figures, and it's pretty attractive, or certainly the capacity to do that. So I think most people at that age would prefer to go on their, you know, trip to Vegas with their mates or buy the latest. lease the latest BMW X5 car or whatever it may be, because their liabilities, not assets. And I don't know, it might be, I think, the risk factor. As I said, I had my father behind me to encourage me, to get me started. But certainly, you know, the funny thing is, I look back now and I know a number of other people have left the industry with only maybe one or two properties after being in the industry, 30, 40 years. If they just bought one every 2 years and didn't explore, I had just buy a unit or flat, just, you know, the lowest denominator, they would have, you know, and even now I say to my guys, if you buy one every 2 years at the end of 10, 15-year career, you look back, you got your 6, 7, 8 properties.
Perfect.
You're really set up for the rest of your life. Whether you continue to do real estate in your mid-40s or not, it's irrelevant.
So for the listener who's part of our community and who don't understand the earning of income through results,
they
get their paycheck, does that play part of it? Because you might get an agent that's had a standout year and they get 150 to 250, right?
Yep.
But do they have this intrinsic sort of fear that that's not going to continue going forward? So therefore, oh, that was a breakout year, I can't service the debt next year.
Normally, agents who are earning 150, 250 in personal income are generally at the top of the tree in terms of being able to write, you know, some pretty good numbers. And they've usually got a pretty good system with PAs and they know the formula, they know how to be successful. I think that they're probably a little bit shy about taking that risk. You know, again, the time you take tax out, there's not a lot there. So it's really having those experts, get back to that point, having those experts around you, your accountant, your financial planner, your father, whatever, and mapping out a bit of a plan, a bit of a strategy, as opposed to, oh, yeah, I'll do it next year, and maybe the market continues on its merry way, I might do it. But you just got to jump off the cliff and actually buy one. Once you've bought one and done it up, the second one's so much easier, and even the third one, the fourth one. So
once you get comfortable with the,
you do, you understand
all the zeros
the systems
on the debt level on the bank account, and you go, well, actually, I'll put it against all of the zeros against the property portfolio.
Yeah,
starts to feel a little bit more comfortable.
But then again, if mates are going overseas or going to Vegas or the NFL Super Bowl, and you want to go blow your 20 grand over there, well, so be it. But you know, we're all young once. But at some stage, I think buying a boring asset like an investment property can give you some pretty good wealth.
So, Ben, we should say a shout out to all the sales agents across Australia. They should go to our, you know, grandma and beer, pots of beer, and know how to manage your money.
Realestate.com.au.
Very good. Hey, what was the worst piece of property advice you've been given?
Oh, the worst piece of property advice.
Sounds like that wasn't part of the dialogue at the dinner table at home, but is someone said,
or was there one that got away? One that you should have bought.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, you know, I just missed out on actually an auction on the weekend. I was the under-direct underbidder, and sometimes you walk away and you kick yourself, and then other times you buy remorse, you really do the right thing. Look, occasionally you drive past the property, and there's that old classic line, you know, would have, should have, could have, in 5 years' time, 10 years' time.
Uh-huh.
And I always encourage buyers, if not staff members, family members, or just buyers out there in the marketplace, that when you are going to an auction and you know where fair value is and you know your limit, pay the spread. In other words, in the old money market days, pay across the, you know, if it's 76 cents, 78 cents, go and pay the 78. Go and pay that and a little bit extra, because there's no prizes for second best. Either you got it, you haven't got it.
Yep.
So if you're going to buy that one asset
playing the long game
in 2018, go and buy it. If you've picked it out and you've done your research, that's the one. Because in the way the market's going, within the 90-day settlement, you would have made up that last little 1% or 2% extra that you've paid. So no real mad things that staff out in terms of mistakes, but obviously a couple of regrets along the way that we would have liked to have got that one.
Woulda, shoulda, coulda. Yeah. I love it.
How many auctions have you called roughly to the nearest 100?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not on the tools anywhere near as much as I used to, but probably I'd average between probably, I don't know, 50 to 70 a year.
And we do have selling agents listening to our podcast, but the majority are from the buyer side. When you're calling an auction, what are some of the things you see that the mistakes that buyers make, which they could easily avoid doing to give themselves a better chance to be the person that gets knocked down to them?
I think sometimes a little bit of psychology and body language comes into it. As an auctioneer, I watch it, and I watch the professional buyer's advocates, which is certainly a new phenomenon over the last 5 or 10 years coming to the marketplace. Of course, as auctioneers, we love when buyer's advocates rock up, because we know we've got someone there who's nibbling the bait. But then, of course, they've got the young...
Yeah, we don't like auctioneers who know what they're doing. We like the ones that are a bit nervous.
Yeah, and then you've got the young couple who are humming and harring, and you can see when the bidding gets serious and it's going to their limit, the buyer's agent, the way that they bid and bid aggressively is really, from that point of view, it looks like they've got a bucket full of money. And I think the if you're a young buyer out there and you're going to your auction next Saturday, bid a bit aggressively. And I think that way it just shows the fact that, you know, you're there to mean business.
Don't look at each other. When you're getting to your limit, don't sort of then have the conversation. You should have had that all beforehand. Yeah,
look cool.
You should know what you look
game
cool.
Game of poker, wear the sunglasses. It's a grey overcast Saturday morning. But generally, bid aggressively. I think that's the best way to actually secure the property.
Yeah, it's a consistent theme. We had Tim Heaviside from Fletcher's over in the eastern suburbs, and he said the analogy he gave is, think of it as a cliff, and the cliff is the drop-off where your limit ends.
Yes.
But he says, run as fast as you possibly can towards the cliff.
Yes.
Because no one knows where the cliff face ends.
Yeah, that's a good analogy, yeah.
And you know, one of our team was chatting with me during the week, and she mentioned to me that the auction that she's going for today, she use your term, the spread. She doesn't have a big spread from where it's called on the market. It's a boardroom auction.
Yes.
So she is going to sprint to the cliff face as hard as she possibly can because she doesn't have a lot of spread in it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. We have a limit.
Yes.
Yeah, of course we do. But everyone has a limit.
Yeah. Two part strategy, one part bluff.
Yeah.
You know, just obviously because we are a buyer's podcast.
Yes.
What are some of the things that you would like to see buyers do more often when they're dealing with estate agents? Like, is there anything that, any advice that you would give to a buyer when they're dealing with a professional negotiator?
Well, firstly, a couple of things. If buyers are out there, it's a little bit frustrating trying to do it by yourself. I think number one is they need to actually form a relationship with one salesperson per firm. Okay. So if you're a young buyer, and for example, you're looking at the Inner West, there's probably four or five of our competitors. I mean, pick your best three, plus Jazz, and basically link up with probably a buyer that you feel very comfortable with, male, female, whatever it might be, older, young. Find that person within that firm and then form a relationship. And the way I would do it if I was a buyer is I'd ring that person once a week, every week. For example, at Jazz Stevens, we have our stock run. We call it the caravan run every Tuesday morning.
Yep.
Give that salesperson a phone call every Tuesday lunchtime and find out what is coming up. Because a lot of our properties, for example, these days, we've gone from probably 5% to about 15, 20% are actually off-markets. So the off-market is that we've listed it, the vendor is not quite ready to put on the market just yet.
So pre-market type.
Pre-market, having said that, he's open to offers.
Yep.
So if we've got a hot buyer ready to go, we're more than happy to show them through and save the vendor a little bit of marketing expense along the way. So it may suit that particular buyer. So I would certainly be doing that. And secondly, know your market. You know, go through the auction results like we do as agents every single Monday and know the market, because occasionally property gets passed in and gets falls through the cracks, probably with the lesser profile agents. That's the opportunity we can actually strike and strike pretty quickly.
Yep, okay. Great tips.
You talked about off markets.
Yep.
Buyer's agents get them a lot because the sales agent knows, they ring a buyer's agent and they won't muck around, they get it done.
Perfect, yep.
Do you see that being, you know, to the everyday buyer, that could be a big deterrent for them, because if they want to stuff around, the sales agent will move on very quickly, won't they?
Yeah, I think that's where the buyer's agent knows value. You're employed to do that and you can move pretty quickly. Whereas the young couple would tend to want to get a building inspection done, or mum and dad to come through and have a second look, and dad's not available till after the weekend. And you know, that 1 or 2 day window, we haven't got 1 to 2 weeks. My vendor hasn't got 1 to 2 weeks. So either put up or shut up and come through and make us an offer within the next 24 out to 48 hours.
Yep.
Of course, you're buying it private sale, there's a 3 day cooling off period, but get the contract vetted, have your solicitor ready to go, bang, done, and we normally get a builder through, but try and actually do it prior to going in the market. So you've normally got 1 to 2 days to make a decision on these off markets as opposed to 2 to 3 weeks, which is just too long.
You gotta move quick. Product knowledge.
Yep.
What are you teaching your guys in terms of product knowledge? They've got to know where the streets are, they've got to know where the village is, they've got to know all the notables in the suburb.
Sure.
What are some of the things that most buyers wouldn't think about that the sales agents are learning and they should maybe look into?
Well, I think it's just back to data. I mean, what I've noticed over my 22-year career is that data now is far more accessible for the everyday buyer than it was, going back even 10 years ago. So we go through as a sales team, for example, the auction results produced in The Age or obviously online every Monday morning. We'd probably take, on average of our 1 hour sales meeting, a good 20 minutes to go through each of our suburbs that we cover off in both the city of Hobson Bay and city of Maranong, and go through each of those results and analyse that and then actually have that. So I would think from a buyer's perspective, you'd probably want to spend at least 20 minutes a week going through the results of the suburbs that you're considering and making sure you know that.
And Craig, how do you know you've got a good agent when it comes to things like subject to council approval, planning guidelines, easements, all those other sort of little details?
Sure.
When you got, I know when I've got a great agent because they can reel off the zoning, what can fit on the block, what the dimensions need to be, what's the open livable space concepts and all of that. You know, the best in the business know all that stuff, don't they?
Sure. And look, I think the agent, a good agent, we have to share that information. But at the same time, I think the agents are dealing with that many properties and that many scenarios that I'd certainly, if I was a buyer, have my own panel of experts, which I go quickly whip through a contract of sale and say, hey, listen, do you think I can get one or two on this particular block,
town planner or something
town
like
planner,
that.
What's the heritage overlay here?
Yep.
Those types of things. And I get back to having your accountant, your financial planner, and a town planner is really, really good if you want to do some renovations to a house. Yep. You know, so what are my chances of doing a nice upstairs extension here? Is that going to be possible? That type of thing.
Exactly.
What's the best house you've been through in your career? It doesn't have to be in your patch. It doesn't have to be in Australia. But have you seen some real estate that's blown your mind in your time?
Oh, obviously I've been travelling a little bit in the States, and you see some things over there now, which is just amazing. Some of the apartments in New York, had the opportunity to go and have a look at that. I mean, talk about views and spectacular views. It's really hard to put a dollar value on that. Yeah. Upper west side, upper east side,
30-foot ceilings, not 15, just enormous. Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, and it all gets back to that well-worn cliche, location, location, location. I mean, I love New York and, an apartment opposite Central Park. I mean, what do you put a dollar value on that?
Yeah.
And that's why, when they come up for sale.
Hence the scarcity.
Scarcity, exactly.
Sounds like a good name for a television show there. Hey, I've got a couple of quick ones, Ben, as you think about some of the final ones. Are you a reader? Have you got any sort of book recommendations that you'd suggest people read?
Yeah, good question. I've got a library at home in my study, and I encourage everyone to build a library. Mine is certainly of property books and philosophy and motivation. Probably don't read as much as I used to. But my first book really made a big impact on me and in terms of encouraging me to go out there and build an investment portfolio with Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, written in the 1930s, classic book. Nick Stewart was a trainer at the time who put me onto it. I just love
Google
that.
It. You can download it for free because it's outside of its copyright.
Is it?
Yep. Yeah. So it's free available. I mean, there's plenty of places you can get it. Someone will try and get an email address from you. But so there you go. You don't even have to wait. Just basically get it and download it.
Yeah, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, a classic book written in the 1930s.
Maybe we can see if we can get a copy of it and put it up on our... We'll see if we aren't breaching any copyright.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But we do know that it is out there.
And the key word's in the title of the book too. So what advice have you passed on? Because it's four generations. Does it mean that your kids are...
I've got twin boys, 17 years of age, going through VC at the moment, which is pretty fun. And two girls, 22 and 20.
Yeah.
So my 22-year-old with a boyfriend is currently sitting down just going through some numbers at the moment and getting educated about finance and how it all works.
Yeah. Tell him a good podcast of yours.
Early days for those kids.
And so what advice have you passed over to the kitchen table for them? Has it changed from what your dad's advice was to you, or is it just passing the baton?
No, it's the same. I mean, the classic quote, if you create your wealth through your assets, not through your pay packet. So whatever they want to do, whether my daughter wants to be a primary school teacher, whether my son wants to be a pilot, or whether my other son wants to be a music producer, it doesn't matter what area of career you choose, I still want my kids to actually build their wealth through negative gear property, and that will be the same, I think, in 5, 10, 25 years' time.
One last one for me. What is two words for you? What does success mean to you, and what does financial freedom mean to you?
Financial freedom is choices. It's great to have that choice, and happiness, I think, from that point of view. So it gives me great pleasure to do things with my family that I can do, and certainly look forward to doing that in the years to come.
happiness is Western Bulldogs winning the
Woof Woof. Yeah, that gave me a lot
that
of joy.
That was a great year.
A lot of joy. We're still celebrating out West. So go Doggies.
Can you believe it? I was living in the West then, and I was out of town when that game was on, so I didn't get to enjoy the spoils. But Ben, I'm sure you'll agree with...
brilliant.
So we'll give the opportunity, Ben, won't we, that if someone was... You know, we've got someone who might be wanting to sell their house in the inner West of Melbourne, and why would they... I know you're going to say Jazz for sure, but what should they look at when they're talking to that sales agent to help them decide? Because everyone's walking and saying, you should use our brand. But what are the key characteristics of the agent?
I think a really good agent is someone who's got empathy and actually understand their particular situation. And that will only come through that agent asking a whole series of questions. I think a lot of agents go in there and go, you know, rah, 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 put out their chest and we're the biggest, we're the best, we're number one. A little bit of ego comes to it. But I think a really good agent who's empathetic and understanding their needs and then trying to match a solution to their needs is probably the best agent to go with. Mm-hmm. Not all the time it's best to go auction or, now I say, private sale or off markets. There's a number of different ways to slice a cake. So at the end of the day, I think an agent who understands where you're coming from is the best agent to go with.
And have some great advice.
And your gut feel. Just go with your gut feel.
Yeah, terrific advice.
Brilliant.
All right, well, I asked Craig to come on a couple of weeks ago. Ben, I was really excited because not only has there been longevity in the business in the inner West, but investing for a long time and personally investing in his own portfolio, which I think is just a terrific message to send to people who are listening, that, you know, someone who's actually in the field, who's been doing it for a long time, has got some terrific results.
And they're number one in their field. So, I mean, we always try and get the best on the podcast because, they dominate their market. If, you know, you just need, 41 people in their staff, just says to them, as an independent, they're doing some good things in the West.
Very good, very good. Now, Ben, my life hack this week is largely around ARIC. So you would have seen there was 18 speakers and they whipped through. I got up at 3:30 on Sunday morning to get there for that first session that we missed, unfortunately. But for me, my life hack is everyone knows that I'm an Evernote fan.
Yes.
And so I spent the whole time, Craig, where all of the presentations, it was very, very simple. Someone put up a PowerPoint slide. I just had an iPhone 7 so I could zoom in, took a photo of their slide, and then I can actually put those photos into an Evernote, a note, and then I just put an ARIC tag, which I did last year, and I've done it every seminar I've ever been.
Okay.
So I'm actually able to get the information from these terrific speakers who, some of them were only given 20 minutes of time. So they had to get up and deliver their best bits of gold. And so it meant that I could distill it and bring it all in. And then on the plane on the way home, I was able to, just on my phone, just review all these notes and actually see the takeaways that I'm going to bring to the team here. So my life hack is very, very simple, that all you need is Evernote, Ben. I know you think I'm on commission. I'm not. It's not paid for comment.
Well, if Evernote like to sponsor the podcast, feel free to reach out to us.
Yeah, they're absolutely able to. But I would say to anyone that I now have every business meeting I've ever been in. Well, that's not true. In the last two years, not that I've ever been in. But I can quickly find the notes and I don't have to carry around. It stays in my pocket the whole time. And the Better Business Summit, ARIC. So that's my life hack to you folks. If you're going to a presentation and you're a student of life, use Evernote to capture those ideas. Put a tag on it. And Ivis, I'm going to put a link to a blog article on how to organise Evernote. It's not one that I did. It's someone else has done it, but it shows people how to do the hierarchy so they can do it exactly what I'm doing, so they can implement it, Ben, into their life.
And I know you're all about productivity, so bring it on.
Bring it on. So, very good. Did you know?
Did you know? So I just thought I'd get some stats out to everyone. We've done a couple of these stats before, but I wanted to highlight one particular. So this is the CoreLogic. So CoreLogic RP data. So if you don't know who they are, check them out. They provide a lot of insightful information in regards to data in the residential property market. So as of April 2017, which is their latest data, $7 trillion. So residential property is now valued. So they value every property in Australia every week, okay? And they provide that information to banking institutions so they can, so basically they can assess the risk in their book in terms of the lending though. So 7 trillion. Compare that to superannuation, 2.2 trillion. Against the Australian stock market, 1.8 trillion. And commercial real estate, 0.917 million. So obviously it's the biggest game in town. And this correlates to this one, which is really what I wanted to highlight, that household wealth, so people's wealth in Australia, 52.2% of it is tied up in their family home, is held in the property So that just goes to show you the importance of that. Now, if you get the selection right, well, we know that, you know, you basically could have $300,000 or $400,000 in value in 20 years' time, you know, compared to poor selection or buying in the wrong location. So just a little takeaway there, 52.2% of all Australians' household wealth is held in housing.
Very good, Ben. And because you had razor blades in your throat yesterday, subbed me into the CoreLogic lunch yesterday, which was very nice. Thank you for that tag.
That's all right.
And so the May figure's coming out today.
Oh, brilliant.
May figures are coming out today. So,
all right. Well, we might see if we can get a hold of them and put them on the website.
So that was very good. So thanks again, Craig. It's been a pleasure. If you're a first-time listener, we always say to you, go back to the first one and put it at 1.5 times speed, because although we're now up to 118 episodes, Ben, some of what we talked about today and last week will make sense if you do those foundational episodes. So please go through and do that. And of course, Ben, we have done that series with realestate.com.au.
We have.
It's 6 videos, 2 of them out. So go to our Facebook and you'll be able to check that out. So at The Property Couch, at Bryce Holdaway, at Ben Kingsley AU, because we are distributing them out. Yeah. So, and we've also got some feedback which we'll cover off next week.
And I know that's right, because I did mention we were going to talk about a message from Greg. So we'll get to that next week, Greg, in terms of the first video that we did.
But I think it's a good one, Ben. You might want to tease the listeners about what it is.
Well, it talks about, you know, putting the pay yourself first strategy forward. And we don't necessarily agree with pay yourself first. So this is the whole point of Money Smart. So yes, we'll put that out there. So Greg, we'll answer that question next week.
We'll absolutely cover that. So thanks for bringing it in. But there we go, folks. We covered a lot, Ivis. You're panicking about the time
there. She was panicking. She thought I was going to go to the question and we're over time, so we haven't done that yet.
We will do it next week. But,
why doesn't anyone trust me in here?
You got a wide berth, mate. You can do whatever you like, as long as it's not talking about Collingwood. So, but again, thanks very much for coming.
Thanks,
Craig.
Thanks, Ben.
You coming on. I think the listeners will get a lot out of that. And Ben, until next week. See ya. Bye.